Good afternoon, Brendan.
Yes, I did have it on. It was a long hour and 20 minutes or so of American fanfare and self-congratulations from the president. So it wasn't always the most edifying viewing, but one of those important events in the American political calendar.
Well, it is. It's an annual address. I guess usually it gives a chance for the president to sort of set the course for the coming year and also commend their own achievements of what they've done so far. Obviously, Trump doesn't need much chance, opportunity to do that. But what were some of the sort of big takeaways and things from the speech today that really stood out?
Well, he didn't mention impeachment, which was probably an act of kind of self-control that you wouldn't totally expect from Trump to do a victory lap before he'd been acquitted, so that was showed some decorum, but there was a sort of very bitter and kind of tough edge to the relationship with Nancy Pelosi. Trump refused to shake her hand. She tore up his speech the end. She seldom got up to congratulate him on anything he said. Trump claimed credit for the U.S. unemployment figures being very low at the moment, the stock market being high. He saw that as his triumphs rather than something that America bounced back in really through the Obama period and into the Trump presidency. So typical Donald Trump, claiming all that was good and blaming his opponents for all that was bad.
Well, that's it. And of course, obviously, it's very partisan when you look at the applause in the chamber. You've got the Democrats on one side and the Republicans there, and they all stood up after seemingly every sentence. It's pretty painful. I reckon there's half an hour of clapping just in the, out of that hour and 20.
Yes, it's a kind of pageantry in some regards. Yeah. And there are people who are sort of Afghanistan soldiers and famous former veterans of the Second World War, Tuskegee soldiers, sort of airmen who were there, people who wanted to be astronauts. You know, there's usually a list of characters. There was Rush Limbaugh, who was the hard right talk radio person. It really kind of was the, in some ways, the inspiration for Fox News. He was in the audience and he got the Medal of Freedom, which for me was one of the more difficult moments to sit through and digest. But that sort of showed the connection between right-wing media and the Trump administration that many people knew of, but that was just very much brought it into the focus of an international and national audience.
Well, that's right. I mean, it was one of those things I sort of watched bits of because, you know, I was losing brain cells as I went. But the fact that at the end, Nancy Pelosi pretty much, she was like fiddling with the papers through the whole thing, which was actually quite entertaining. I was watching her. But then at the end, very theatrically rips the speech in half, tosses it in the bin. Of course, all the media's latched onto it, like, you know, how could she? Or some people are just saying, well, it's where it deserves to go. But, I mean, is she trying to sort of overshadow things a little bit by doing that?
Well, I think the sense of Trump's triumphant kind of claiming of all economic sort of benefits as being about him, not, you know, really the America's kind of gradual recovery from the financial crisis of 2008, is a little hard to sort of take. Then very much pointing to this very negative theme about immigrants, you know, finding a few examples, very egregious, of illegal immigrants who have committed terrible crimes, but there are terrible crimes committed by Americans, you know, who have lived there for a long time with guns, as we know, over the last year. So this is part of Trump's sort of fear-mongering comes into it. He wants to present himself early as the savior of America, that America is great again, that all is well in America. But then there's this very much scapegoating edge to it as the speech went on. And that kind of appeal to the sort of partisan base, or at least his base, on these issues of fear and putting up a wall and anti-immigration that we've heard a lot from Trump, his kind of nativism, his nationalist kind of appeal to white Americans. So that, you know, that in itself probably deserves a speech being ripped in half.
Well, yeah, maybe that's where it belongs. So meanwhile, as the State of the Union obviously is done and dusted now, we're in the middle of the Iowa caucuses, which if people aren't sure of what that means, it's the first cab off the rank for the primaries for the Democrats and Republicans to select the next presidential candidates. Now, it starts in Iowa. It's one of these things which, you know, should be fairly quick to count and decide who wins. But what's going on? It's one of the slowest counts I can ever think of. I think 71% has been counted. And where are we looking? We've got Buttigieg, Bernie Sanders, of course, and some other ones have sort of dropped off a little bit.
Yes. Pete Buttigieg, that's a kind of a...
Is that how you say it? Sorry, I should have known it.
it's like a Scrabble hand that you're not sure what you're going to score any points off. You've got lots of T's and G's in it, and you're thinking, what's going to happen here?
Yeah. Obviously, got it way wrong, but I'm sure Ralph will
too.
Well,
it's a very difficult name to say when you first come across it. And he is new to American politics, 38 years old, former mayor of South Bend, Indiana. And he is the first really successful openly gay male candidate in American politics. Yeah. He possibly has won the Iowa caucuses. The Iowa caucuses are a very peculiar and quirky event. You go along for a couple of hours on a cold Iowa night and you argue about politics, and then you vote, and if you don't get enough people voting for your candidate, then you have to sort of reallocate yourself in a room in front of your neighbours or... you know, fellow community members to a bigger group to get a quorum over 15%. Right. And if that wasn't enough, now it's the counting is going on for 2 days. So I don't think this is how I would like to be remembered. I think they want a much smoother voting process. But it does make the caucuses, you know, this kind of incredibly drawn-out, labour-intensive process. So we'll be getting sort of drip-fed for the next week, maybe, you know, Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg just sort of being edging each other out of the lead. Famously, in 2012, Mitt Romney was declared the winner of the Iowa caucuses on the Republican side, but 2 weeks later, when they really counted the numbers up, they were able to find that his opponent, Rick Santorum, had actually won. Oh. So it's not, you know, it's more Athenian-style democracy than modern kind of democracy.
Yeah, yeah, and also Iowa doesn't represent the country as a whole, I guess. It just seems to be a sign of what's to come, maybe.
Yeah, it's a tradition that it goes first. They take their politics seriously. Lots of people turn out to town hall meetings, which is to be encouraged, and listen to candidates. So they do deserve, I think, some kind of first-in-the-nation status, but it really tells us something about going to apps and online voting formats and counting of voting, that it's harder to prove the sense of, well, how do we know the numbers? There's something, I think, quite sort of something enduring about the physical count. You know, our basic system in Australia of pencil and paper and ballot papers, there's a lot to be said for it, because it's a physical record. And in the age of conspiracy theories, particularly with Trump in the White House, I think the basic approach may be preferable to these, you know, so-called speedier approaches. Now, I sound like a fuddy-duddy saying that, but I think I think that there's probably a lot to be said for having a physical record when the arguments come forth in November in America. Well, if, you know, if Trump loses, there'll be all sorts of people to blame, and one of them will be the voting approach.
Well, that's it. I mean, I think traditionally, historically, they've had issues with this sort of online voting as well, so it's not a new thing, but you think they'd find pretty rock-solid systems here, but it doesn't seem so. as we mentioned, Paul Buttigieg, sorry, is that how you say it? Buttigieg.
Yeah, Pete Buttigieg.
Buttigieg is leading very slimly in the votes at the moment. Bernie Sanders just behind him. It's like 26% to 25%. Elizabeth Warren in the middle there, 18%. And then quite sort of noticeably lower is Joe Biden on 15%, and Amy Klobuchar on about 12%. Those sort of numbers quite surprising from Joe Biden there?
Totally surprising. I mean, Biden's been the front runner all year.
Yeah.
All the Iowa polls had him around 21%, close to Bernie Sanders, if not ahead of Bernie Sanders in a few of the polls. So it's another blow for polling. It's another big blow for Joe Biden. This is his third time round in Iowa.
Yeah.
He ran in 1988 and in 2008. And Iowans have never warmed to him that much. So his campaign was pronounced almost as a hot favourite when he announced run. He's been really running on the coattails of the Obama presidency, but his performances have been poor. If you've listened to the debates, He's often stumbled over his words. He hasn't been impressive when he's in small group meetings. He's gotten arguments with people about his IQ IQ. It's been unedifying. So I think it's, you know, this is the good side of Iowa, that people get to see a candidate up close. And if the candidate doesn't look like they've really got their act together, they are judged harshly. And it seems, on the face of the evidence we have, that Joe Biden has been marked down for what has been, I think, a pretty uninspiring performance so far on the campaign trail.
Indeed, and he's going to be showing up. It'll be interesting to see if he goes any better in New Hampshire. Is that the second next place?
Hampshire is the first next primary. So caucuses in Iowa, and then New Hampshire is next week, American time on Tuesday.
Okay.
And that will be a big deal because Bernie Sanders has been ahead in all of the polls there. This is probably Sanders' opportunity to really shine. And if Biden does poorly again, you know, money might bleed from his campaign and Buttigieg might emerge as the sort of moderate alternative to Bernie Sanders. So a lot at stake in New Hampshire. Mm. And Buttigieg is, from, you know, giving speeches there today, declaring victory, declaring, you know, to be the first kind of openly gay man who's really done very well in American politics, and riding on some of the emotion of that in the speech that he gave this morning.
Well, it will be really interesting to keep track of what's going on. I really appreciate your time today, especially at late notice after you've had a busy day, I'm sure. I'll be sort of keeping an eye on what's going on in those primaries and, of course, see who can perhaps maybe try and topple Trump later on this year. We'll see what happens. But thank you so much for your time, Brendan O'Connor.
Good to speak with you.